Coming to you live from Podcasty McPodcasterton. It is Rob Has a Podcast, and you may observe that I'm not Rob, and he's still off in Canada. Hopefully they let him back into the country, but in the meantime, you have your regular Amazing Race correspondent, Jessica Lees, and with me is my Amazing Race squad. Please welcome to the program once again, Mr. Dan Heaton and Mr. Mike Bloom. Hello, gentlemen.
Hopefully the audience will give us at least 1 ounce of yay in response to our return to the podcast.
I think you get more than a little ounce of yay.
I don't know. Those people that picked me apart for not knowing what a tinker was last time I was on the podcast a couple episodes ago might not be giving me the yay, or they'll be giving me the very demure Brooke version of yay.
Yeah, well, as long as nobody's sliding into your DMs telling you whose hat it was, you know.
Well, I am determined that I will say something tonight that will make someone mad, and then I will feel like I've made it. So I'm going to work on that tonight to be as wrong as possible.
Dan, is it going to be your goal to get on Mike and Liz's hit list?
Yes. I'm not good at picking, as we saw with our draft earlier the year. So I don't think you can trust much of what I say tonight, but I'm going to try anyway.
Well, just as long as you never promised that you would not U-turn me. Because apparently that's a thing now. Like, I guess it's as good a place to start as any, because we can start with this right at the top of the hour and people can fast forward if they're really not interested in this. But I am very interested in this because I think we need to check in with how our fantasy draft that we did before the season started. We need to check in with how we're doing, and how we're doing is basically Mike is kicking everyone's ass.
Team Camera Horse came through. Look, it was a little bit of a come from behind in that we, as you talked about in the previous podcast, Jess, we each, interestingly enough, had one complete team in our various fantasy teams. And I ended up getting the first team that was eliminated, Kevin and Jen. But I mean, after that, none of my other team members were eliminated. There are five teams left. I have each person in the final five teams. For all intents and purposes, if we're doing a winner take all, points be damned, I guess I technically win. Those are weird words to come out of my mouth. I don't think I've ever won anything in my life, so this is a strange feeling, but I had no idea. I was, like we talked about in the podcast, I was just casting for the team fun of it all, to pick the biggest characters and the people I would have most fun watching, and it turned out to be a winning strategy somehow.
Yeah, it was really smart. I mean, three eliminations ago, we each had five players, and I was like, this is going well. I'm feeling good after Seth and Olive went out. And now in the last three eliminations, I've lost a player every time. So Matt and Floyd, I'm sorry, but the odds aren't looking good right now. But I sense a comeback, Mike. So wait, if you win, though, let's say Team Fun wins. Don't we both win then? It's winner take all for both of us, right? So then just Jess loses. I like that.
That's we're sharing their victory no matter what. So I guess it's either going to be me and Dan or me and Jess are going to share this trophy. I know it was looking hairy for a second that the septuple Rob version with Ashton on his back was going to take it all. But luckily that got squandered very quickly. Thank you, U-turn.
Yeah, and I'm not sure what my faith in this show would have looked like if Rob had taken the entire thing with his team consisting of Ashton seven times.
Well, I guess talking about the draft a little bit as well, I want to get your thoughts on, you know, looking back on it. Do you think that we were too high on some people, too low on others? Were there any big people that you're coming back now to the draft board and saying like, oh, I shouldn't have made fun of this person for picking them? I mean, I'm going to kowtow to Dan entirely that I totally underestimated Floyd. I thought that it was a boneheaded move for you to pick him so early, but he is not only such a great presence on the show, but a pretty strong team member at that.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I picked him because I had hit a stretch where my team started out as being very boring, and I thought, this guy looks fun. I had no idea at the time he would be part of Team Fun and it would be that great. But I'm really happy with that pick, and I think I was right with Matt being strong as my top pick. Now, really, though, the other ones that I picked, I mean, Vank and Michael actually, I think, outperformed. Even though I picked them, they both were better than I thought, notwithstanding this week. Shamir was the big miss for me. That was the one where I thought he's going to be one of the best. And oh my goodness, that was my big catastrophic disaster pick. It's the only one. And I thought Jess had a coup with Seth and Olive, and the U-turn has really wreaked havoc with our whole draft pretty much.
Well, I think that then kind of begs the question, like I've been very low on the frequency of the U-turns this season. And I guess from a fantasy draft point of view, it's made things more interesting. But I think from a life point of view, there's another good place to start. How are you guys feeling about three U-turns in a season?
I mean, I don't want to parrot you too much, Jess, in previous podcasts, because I completely agree about how egregious the placement has been in putting it before the detour. What I will say, sort of on the bright side, is of the three U-turns we've seen so far, I think the most egregious one was the second one and not this one. At least with this one, the teams had, and when you're doing a U-turn, even if you're putting it before the detour, which is sort of, you know, committing an Amazing Race 10 on its own, but if you happen to do that, you want to put a buffer in between, right? You want to give teams an ability to compete with each other. So it's not, hey, if you're the first leaver, you're going to be the first to get there. And so the self-driving, as we'll see in this episode, is a great way to sort of balance things out. The second one I really didn't like because it just had they signed up for times on that ferry. They got off the ferry. They went to the clue box and there the U-turn was. There really was no amount of tension in terms of getting lost. It reminded me of I think it was in the third leg of the Amazing Race Family Edition, where the roadblock was like go through a centrifuge, like you were getting ready for NASA. And it was basically you picked a number, you went through, and that was the place that you stopped at the pit stop. So basically the team that picked the last number at the roadblock got eliminated. And I don't like things that essentially move the teams around like conveyor belts. So I will say it was better than maybe the previous U-turn, but that's still not a lot to say considering that. Again, not to parrot you too much, but I don't know why they're doing these before the detours. Who knows how things might have been had they put it afterwards, but it's feeling wonky to me, and it feels like the producers are trying to really stir up drama when, as we see amongst these teams of strangers, there really doesn't need to be too much manufactured drama.
No, well, I mean, the proof's in the pudding, right? I mean, these U-turns have actually resulted in the elimination of 2.5 really strong teams, right? I would say Seth and Olive, strong team. You know, Mike and Liz, pretty strong team. Vank and Ashton, strong-ish.
Yeah, and I'll piggyback a little bit on that. And I think with Seth and Olive, that, I mean, they did seem a little boring, but it really did knock out a team that was pretty strong early, which is unfortunate. But that does happen with U-turns, unfortunately, and that's the risk they take when they put them on the show. But I see why they did it. I can see why they put those U-turns in front of the detour, and even why they're putting them at the front of the legs, is that they're basically going, we want to put it at the beginning. Then the rest of the episode is teams. They have all these chances. There's a roadblock. Well, they run around a track that didn't do much. So I see why they did it. But I think what I don't like about it more than even that, I agree, I don't like it in front because it's not really a U-turn, but also it seems like it dominates the episode so much. Mm-hmm. When you have it at the very front, it's not a surprise. They find out when they get the clue, it says there'll be a U-turn. So then you have a team that go U-turn, U-turn, U-turn. That's all they talk about. We've had three episodes in the last maybe five or six, I think, where that's all they've talked about. So it can lead to some good drama and maybe even like the tense finish like we saw this week. But what it does is it becomes a show about the U-turn and about the game and strategy. And that's part of it. But I'm not sure that's why I love the show. And I don't. Two of the three episodes, like you said, Mike, I think were still good episodes. The one I feel like was a dud, but it kind of shifts the show in a weird way. And that's when you have three. I'm kind of happy at least the rest of the way we don't have any more, though.
Yeah, it was like there were a few Amazing Race seasons where I feel like for the first half in particular were basically all about the express pass, particularly like Amazing Race 23. It was all about like, will Tim and Marie use the express pass? Will Nicole and Travis use the express pass? And that was basically like their storyline every episode, so that when we finally got rid of it, we can say, OK, we can finally move on. Now that we've sort of expended our final U-turn. At least we can move on from that. I also have, and I don't want to sort of like blanket this podcast in misery to start, because I will say, I'll parrot what I said a couple of episodes ago when I guessed it on the podcast. I still think great teams, not so great leg design. I think this is sort of an example of it. I don't like doing U-turns the leg after a non-elimination as well, because what Brooke and Scott did has been done a couple times before in Amazing Race history. It's a pretty good strategy of like, hey, if we have to U-turn somebody, which we can definitely talk about if you have to U-turn somebody, but if we have to, here's a team that's already going to be behind because they had to do a speed bump, might as well throw a U-turn their way. So unfortunately, we kind of knew that Mike and Liz, in addition to facing a speed bump, are going to have another penalty hefted onto them, which made things a little less fair.
Yeah, that was definitely something I wanted to float to you guys. That seems like pretty bad design, but yeah, you're correct in that it was played correctly, regardless of what they may or may not have promised before this leg. I think it's really like you take a team that's behind you and you put them further behind you, and that's what the U-turns are supposed to be. So I think it's much better that there were actually teams behind them rather than having it be like a little foot race after everybody gets off the ferry. So you had teams behind you. You knew a team was going to be even further behind you than that. Let's just keep knocking that team back. Sure.
Yeah. And I agree. I think they made the right decision given how the race. And Scott even said, he said, it's a game. This is what we're doing. And with only six teams left, you're like, of course, we get to the final five. Somebody screws up the next week. Anything can happen, you know? So it's a smart move. And I don't want to be too down either, because I hate to just repeat what everyone has kind of said or what Mike said, but I really like this cast. I think the Perfect Strangers thing has worked out really well, better than they probably could have expected. The season's hit or miss just because of episode to episode, depending on where they go and what they do, it can vary. But I really enjoy spending time with this group. Even London and Logan, I enjoy spending time with Rob. But no, I like this cast. I'm not sure there's a cast that I've enjoyed more in a little while. And so that's a great thing. It's just some of the decisions beyond the cast have been a little goofy.
I think it's better. Like, well, here's a question for you guys then. Like, if you have to take one away, like what is the better thing to have? Like, is it better to have an amazing cast and kind of a dud race course with some bad leg planning? Or would you rather have a really dynamite course and some kind of meh teams?
I think my opinion on the Amazing Race 6 is very indicative of my answer that, yes, I would much prefer the cast over the route. Again, not to repeat myself too much, you can go back to our Rating the First 27 Seasons podcast if you want to listen to our full thoughts, but I come to this for the characters. I don't come to this necessarily for the travel porn of it all. So while I do acknowledge that, yes, maybe the leg design has not been 100%, and maybe that's due to budget cuts or maybe other restrictions, what brings me back to the show every time are these teams, whether or not they are predetermined relationships or not. And that's why I'm still very high on this season, is that even through, and I wouldn't even say Lolo, I think our predictions about Logan kind of being the dud of the cast were completely correct. I think London still has her little quirky moments, but that might just be me. But I still think on paper, this is a really strong group of people that I think feel like we all have a really good grasp of moving into the final five, which you can't say about some Amazing Race seasons.
Yeah, and it's true. I was saying to Rob last week that, you know, if all of these people had applied for the show with people that they'd maybe were important to them in their lives that they'd chosen themselves, we wouldn't have gotten a cast this good, because we would have had a lot of people where they're the one interesting person and the other person is just sort of dead weight.
Yeah, and I totally agree with that point. And like last week, for example, which you were just talking about, there was, you know, they had an episode that the tasks were fine. But for some reason, there was just such a positive energy coming from the group. And even when there was the non-elimination, it's something different. It reminded me a bit of Survivor Millennials versus Gen X a bit, where that group was so, like, people are getting voted out and people were still laughing about it and joking mostly. And it's not that that's the only important thing. You want them to care about it. But this group has been fun. I don't know if this is a hot take, but if we had another season, and I wouldn't have said this is a start, I think I'd be okay with them doing the individuals again. Is that crazy if they had a season 30 that they would do that again?
If they did a season, I think it would be fun if they did a season 30, because I mean, they could take the Survivor approach and say like, oh, it's just season 30. We don't need to do anything. But if they want to do an All-Stars thing, I think it would be kind of cool to sort of mix the two ideas together in a way to say, let's take, you know, if let's say, for example, you know, Colin and Christy, Colin wants to race, but Christy is pregnant again and can't race. Colin can still come on to the race and he'll be matched up with another previous racer. I think that could be kind of a fun way to combine these returning teams elements with this idea, because I do agree, Dan, I think there's some great stuff to mine out of this Perfect Strangers twist. It might be too soon if they do it again immediately, though, just because I hope that they would still be able to cast good people onto the show.
I think that's an amazing idea, especially since like you have people that have been kind of blowing this horn of, if we got to have another All-Star season, we got to get these people back, and it's got to be like, we want to see all winners, we want to see this, we want to see that. And there are a lot of teams that we're never going to see race again as a team, because either one person doesn't want to do it, or in a lot of cases it's a couple. That couple has since broken up. There's at least one team I know of that were best friends that no longer speak, and this is a way we can get some of those strong personalities back on the show. I love the idea of All-Stars Perfect Strangers. Like, I'm all in on this idea.
That's brilliant. I like it. I mean, because even we saw it in season 11 a bit, where a few of the teams, some of them were just got on just as well. Others did not have the same relationship. And it would also, you could lead to some really odd matchups. And a weird thing, too, is that people then, let's say you did some sort of pick 'em type thing where they would just be picking based on how they were 5 years ago or 7 years ago or with a different partner. It could be a disaster, but I would love to see them try it.
Give me Jonathan and Flo.
No, do not put Jonathan Baker on my screen anymore, please. I think we had enough with him going out with him trying to fight Joe Rogan on Celebrity Fear Factor. I think that's enough we need. But yeah, TARASPS, All Stars Perfect Strangers, put it in the books. I think it could be a lot of fun.
All right. That's an early contender for a hashtag. All right. So, yeah, I think we've covered the cast pretty well. I did want to add one more thing on our draft board that I scoffed really hard at Mike's first round pick of Scott. And that has borne out. I think if we're talking about all around racers, I think Scott might be number one on my board.
Yeah, just because it's sort of like the Zach comparison. And I know I compared the Brooke and Scott to Flo and Zach last time I was on. Jess, I know you've been talking about comparisons to Blaley as well, but yeah, I mean, it's sort of that Scott is not only a good racer in his own right, but he also has to sort of make up for his partner's shortcomings, which you could say a strong team like Matt and Raymond or Tara and Joey, they're sort of able to balance each other out and work off of each other, whereas Scott is more so compensating for his teammate. Not to disparage Brooke too much, because again, I still do love Brooke as a TV character, but yeah, I mean, he is the total package. I don't think they're the strongest team left, but I mean, considering that he's still able, Brooke and Scott are still in the race at the final five, considering how they started off and how their temperament is to this day, it's still pretty staggering. And I think, as you said, Jess, really goes to show Scott's skill as a racer overall.
And let the record show that you both thought that Brooke was going to be a boring pick.
Well, you never could have known how she would be out here on the race. And the great thing about him, too, is he's a good racer and he can be snarky and get upset when she. But then also, like, she last week when she got through the roadblock and he looked like the most amazed. I love the look on his face of amazement. And then she was good again this week. So he's weirdly encouraging. And the best part is he's also very funny and just like, oh, I'm okay with second. Yeah, the second's good.
Yeah, I love that. His inner monologue of it being like, okay, we're in the race. We're in the race. It's probably going to be a foot race. Okay, second's fine. Second's fine. It's just, and you know, he's done countless number of Jim Halpert looks to the camera, even this episode. Yeah, Scott is definitely the most gif-able contestant of the Amazing Race 29. Agreed?
Agreed. Yeah, he's the Aubrey Bracco of this season.
Can't wait for the coleslaw eating challenge that Brooke probably cannot do.
Yeah, Brooke is going to be, she's going to be afraid of coleslaw. So, all right. So we haven't even really talked about, this is our first trip back to Greece in many, many, many seasons. And I've been calling it that they're going back to Greece. I think I've been wrong for 7 seasons in a row now. Like I've said, they're overdue. They're going to go back. They're going to go back. And it's taken them this long and they're finally here. And what do you guys think?
Well, I guess to jog people's memories. So Amazing Race was back in Greece 20 seasons ago, season 9. I don't remember it being that momentous when they went there. I remember the plate smashing fast forward that the yep. frat boys did. But that's basically, I remember much more of the Italy legs that preceded it with, you know, the putting together the statue and Dave and Lori, the nerds melting down. I mean, I think given Greece's situation of the past few years, I think I can understand that, Jess, that it would be on your perennial wish list, but for some reasons, the Amazing Race might not want to go there. But with things reasonably stable, I thought it was nice, and it was nice to explore some of those smaller town elements. I mean, they spent a good half of the task just in one small town, but my God, it looked beautiful.
Yeah, it was
beautiful, although I felt like a lot of the tasks really were just, we're going to Google Greece and see what comes up.
Yeah, that's funny because I was about to say it was beautiful, but so I have a similar thought. It looked great. I love that they did self-driving because they actually got to, you know, self-driving sounds like as opposed to automated driving, but that they got to drive themselves and go around because they got to see more of the country. But having the wedding, and even I saw the promos that were like, it's a big fat Greek wedding. And I was like, oh, my goodness.
Well, to remember that CBS aired the My Big Fat Greek Life, the failed sitcom spinoff of the movie. So clearly, I think they had some of the merchandising cachet from like 15 years ago that they had to cash in on.
You are literally the only person that remembers that, Mike.
Joey Fatone was in it.
Joey Fatone was in the movie, too.
Oh, wait, no. I was thinking Ken Stafford from Survivor Thailand was in it. That's how I remember it.
What?
I believe so. I might have to fact check that, but I believe that was, you know, peak Ken Stafford mania. He was on for a cameo, I believe, in My Big Fat Greek Life.
Well, Ken Stafford and I are Facebook friends, so maybe I'll have to get on the horn to him. Yeah, you are literally the only person that remembers that. In fact, I'm going to guess Ken doesn't even remember that.
Oh, boy. Good. I'm glad to hold him accountable.
Oh, dear. Yeah. But yeah, I feel like maybe they didn't even get through the whole Google search. They just typed in Greek and it finished with wedding. They're like, OK, we're done.
Yeah. And I mean, I generally like it when they have animal tasks. I mean, half of the detour was just carrying an animal, which still was hard for Michael and Liz. But there was, besides one major exception, there wasn't that much out of the animals that was cool. I mean, it's still a nice setting. It wasn't like there's a lot worse places they can go, but it does seem like maybe that's kind of been the way the whole season. They're phoning it in a bit, but I don't mean to be too harsh because it's, you know, they're out in a cool place, but what, I mean, there's a lot else they could do, right? There's so much history for Greece. I mean, I know they saw the racetrack, or I hate to call it a racetrack, but the stadium, which has a lot of history, but then they just had them run a lap. Come on. You gotta do more there. There's more to do.
I wonder if this is me totally putting like my tinfoil hat on, if there was some sort of tourism commission that was, you know, yeah, you can go to the Panathinaik Stadium, but since it's so, you know, it's over 100 years old, you won't actually be able to do anything on there. I'm assuming the race producers would like have them do decathlon events or something. But for one reason or another, they could only do the lap and then they had to leave because, yeah, that was a little lame. It screamed very much of, you know, for the challenge fans out there. It was very much like the Bloodlines finale. It seemed a little lame, but, you know, at least they were able to milk out some historical significance from it, which was nice. It was only a lap, but at the same time, it was a lap in the very first Olympic stadium of the modern times.
Yeah, the bar is getting lower and lower for that kind of stuff too. I mean, given that this is the same season in which one of Phil's fun facts was Italy is shaped like a boot.
Yeah, it also, I hate to bring up the Amazing Race Canada too much, but I was excited at first because what that show does is adds a lot of extra tasks that they do beyond the roadblock detour. So I was like, great, this is awesome. They're going to do another task. and it was not very much to it. So I still, to me, I feel like that's what the show is missing. They just need more steps. And we did have the speed bump, which I enjoyed this week. But overall, I just wish they could find ways to do more tasks, or at least when they do it, have it be something. I mean, it was still hard for Brooke, but in general, that is not that hard for most people.
And she is not a runner.
And it's interesting, though, because as we were going through the episode, I'm like, okay, like, are they going to have a roadblock this episode? Is it going to be a keep on racing again? Is there no pit stop? But having like the speed bump be crammed to the second half of the episode, I guess, like we talked about at the very beginning of this podcast, to have the U-turn right up there at the front, I feel like took up a large amount of airtime just because of all the talk about what to do with it, that as a result, everything else kind of got pushed to the back of the episode. And that's why the back half sort of felt a little rushed, because I agree that I love more route info tasks. It allows them to not only engage with the culture more, but also again, to shake up those numbers. So I think the only number that really got shook up was the boys passing Brooke and Scott, because as you mentioned, Jess, Brooke is not a runner. So I think, like, good on the concept, not so good on the execution here.
I had a horrible moment where I thought, you know, we saw the sign for the speed bump and I saw everybody running around the track and I thought, are they really going to just be like, hey, Mike and Liz, your speed bump is you have to run another lap around the track?
Well, I don't know. Considering how Mike did on those steps, that actually might have taken him a little while.
Sure. I think maybe the fact that they gave him the butcher task, like, he probably would have vastly preferred that. Although that brings up an interesting question. Like, so far we've seen an active duty military officer doing a military drill. We have seen a marching band drum major lead a marching band. We have seen a butcher cut up meat. We have seen a rock climbing instructor climb rocks. Are they doubling down on all of these tasks to try to make somebody five hole?
I think they just want to have that human connection or something. Like, what are, you know, is there going to be like a snowboarding task somewhere down the road? Or I'm trying to think something for, well, we've had a few arts and crafts. I don't know if that fits for London.
Well, no, London was supposed to have her five hole with the palm weaving, right? And yeah, she botched that. So there, it is interesting. Well, I think that as much as people had complained going in about like too many police officers, too many firemen, too many jacked people, etc., everyone else kind of has a very varied set of career paths. So maybe it's coincidental that they just happen to come up with these cultural tasks that happen to fall right in the wheelhouse. I mean, I don't know if they're really like, hey, there's a butcher on this. Let's come up with this speed bump where they have to do something with meat. I just think it just happened to randomly be, though. I don't know. I feel like Michael would be the only person that would be jealous of someone having to do that speed bump if they went back and told him about what they had to do.
Yeah. And I feel like we've kind of reached our hard limit on, random coincidences that we're going to get out of that, because really, who's left and what could we make them do?
Well, what do you think the memory task is going to be? Hey, remember this thing that you did that's, you know, part of the job that you do at home? Try to remember it and put it into this picture.
You know, that's just as likely as it being animals.
So what is Logan's job? Is he like a financial guy or what?
He's a medical supply salesman.
Oh, so, well, they didn't they have that? Oh, in Canada, they had this task with like a dummy and medical supplies.
I'm sorry. I don't know. CPR, they're dead.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be that. So, you know, but there's so many options. Yeah. Yeah. What are the odds? It is funny to think about it from like conspiracy theory, to be like that they have to assume that if Michael gets to this leg, we're going to bring out the speed bump that fits for him. If not, we'll just make him run around the track. I don't know. But I did think that was worth it just for Liz's like expression on her face, which looked like it was the most hideous, vile thing she'd ever seen in her life, and he's like, I love it, this is the greatest. So that speed bump got a lot more out of it than most speed bumps that we've seen.
Well, here's a random question about that, just because it's something I've been thinking about recently. Amazing Race 27 had this really interesting speed bump with Tanner and Josh, I think it was, where it was just, okay, now the other person has to do the roadblock. I know, Jets, you've sort of had a problem with speed bumps in the past. You even alluded to it earlier in this podcast, where sometimes they vary from like being very difficult to just, hey, do this thing for this certain amount of time and then you can move on. Do you want to see, hopefully moving forward with the Amazing Race, no matter what configuration it may be, that the speed bump would be more so affiliated with the main task themselves, that, you know, if they had it in this case, Michael would have to do the other side of the roadblock then instead of having to. Granted, we wouldn't have Mike engaging with his meats and Liz freaking out at the same time, but it would be a way to always rely on the speed bump being something that is difficult enough to, you know, set it apart from the rest of the tasks.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, Mike, because this is a conversation I can't ever have with Rob, and it's why I'm glad you guys are here. Because in Amazing Race Norway, they do exactly that thing. And I think it's a really smart idea. Their speed bump is called a handicap. And what it is it's basically at a certain point on your race, your task is just going to be a little bit harder than everybody else. Like, they've done that classic task in India where you have to make the fuel cakes out of dung. And the team that had the handicap, instead of making 50 like everybody else, they had to make 75. And they don't have to think up an extra task. They don't have to set up an extra task. They just make one task a little bit harder. Like, there was a puzzle and one team's puzzle had more pieces. So I think it's a really smart idea. If they're looking to cut corners, this is a way they could do it.
Yeah, and part of me thinks at first, oh, don't do that. But some of the speed bumps have been so lame. Like, I mean, sitting on a block of ice or eating ice cream or whatnot. I mean, I almost could not laugh just saying that. So, I mean, you think about this, like, you know, maybe the roadblock, I don't know, maybe the detour, you just tell them they have to get 4 goats instead of 2. Of course, for them, that means they might have had to go up 3 times then. But something like that.
Or maybe one of the goats is a sheep.
Oh, right. which is very odd. I guess they really say in the clue that they were going to, didn't they just say you have to go get something that's a gift for the groom? So yeah, maybe they were leaving it open. The next team got a bird or something.
They really want to open up. I think they wanted you that to have like the surprise of like, hey, this is a live animal for you to carry down. And it's surprisingly ironic that the man who would fawn over having to handle dead animals later on in the leg was the one that forgot his live animal earlier on in the leg.
It is ironic. But anyway, I got to drop an Amazing Race Norway reference on you guys, so I'm happy.
Yeah, we're sending out hints to production in the first half of this podcast between like casting for an all-star season and how to fix speed bumps. I think we're doing our own Amazing Race think tank nested within this podcast.
Well, we'll see if they take any of these suggestions because, you know, it's been by blind coincidence, they've taken some of my suggestions in the past. So, you know, after blind date season, I said either everybody has to be blind dates or nobody does. And look at that. Everybody is. I'm taking credit for it. It was all me.
Yeah, I mean, you've been talking about it for long enough. You think they would jump on more of them. All I ever say is we need more tests, or, you know, they never take that. Instead, they're like, no, we're just going to make the test even be less, you know. But I mean, I would say another suggestion I would have made is about the driving. And while it's not thrilling to watch people be lost forever, like we had that was a lot of this episode. I do think I really like what they've done this season where they seem to spend less time in cabs. And that's not just this season, but because you see it, Michael and Liz have done okay on almost every task except for her with the mask, but they cannot drive around countries to save their lives. And he will not stop the car and turn around no matter what she says. That's been both times twice they finished last. He was so determined. It's like he's going off the cliff and he's like, we're going, we're going to keep going. And so
Doyle rules.
Something we wouldn't see if we didn't have the driving. So that's a change they made this season that I really enjoyed. As opposed to saying a lot of the things with tasks which haven't been good. So that's been a positive.
Well, let's talk about that. Because I do feel like, you know, it's really funny again that as soon as Mike and Liz get off that ferry into Greece, they're like, great, okay, we know what happened last time. This time we're gonna talk, we're gonna be nice to each other. But I mean, if we're siding with team members here, we are almost all team Liz, right? I mean, I don't know what the geography was like, but dude should have just turned the car around as soon as they realized they were going the wrong way. I don't know why he thought that if I make a right here, this is going to somehow make me wind up going through the mountains to this town instead of making the actual right that I was supposed to.
Well, yeah, I'm 100% Team Liz on this. Although I do think that if we are going to have these legs where they want to bunch everybody in as close as possible, and the tasks are going to take everybody roughly the same amount of time, having people self-drive is not only a throwback to the early seasons when everybody was always self-driving, it really does give teams a chance to actually, you know, get ahead or get behind. And really, if we look at this leg in the whole, I would say Mike and Liz's whole game lived and died by that one decision not to turn around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they could have just easily done like, hey, I mean, it's that always perennial conflict with Amazing Race of like, hey, we went one way and a bunch of teams went the other way. What should we do? And I can't put myself in Michael's head as to why he thought for some reason, no, we'll keep going. We'll figure it out. I mean, I feel like at the very worst, if you follow the rest of the teams, you're tied. You're in a 4-way tie for last place. Right. I feel like especially even though there's only 6 teams left, sticking together in numbers is good because you can see at least one team in front of you that you would be able to beat rather than sort of throwing yourself into the great unknown of, hey, we have no idea what place we're in.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
And I think it's interesting, too, that I mean, like you mentioned, you know, I love the early seasons, of course, like Jess said, that it's always, but you do run the risk of one team like this. We kind of lucked out a bit. I mean, 2 teams got lost with the driving, but when you have one team get lost, it just kills the momentum. I think that's one reason they don't do it because, well, I mean, they just want teams to hop in cabs and stay close together. But because it happened to 2 teams, it actually kind of benefited in that way where it totally pushed them both that the other way. But if let's say, even if there was no U-turn, the thing is, they would have been in a similar position. Team Fun actually probably gets eliminated if there's no U-turn because Michael and Liz don't even have to go up those steps twice with the goats.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. Although, you know, they do still have that speed bump.
True. And that we don't know how long that took because it was so close to the end and everything. And it might have been that it took them 45 minutes. I always assume speed bumps don't take long, but preparing all those intestines, who knows?
I had an awful moment watching that where, you know, we weren't getting to the speed bump. I thought it might end up being one of those like team long hair don't care moments where you see the speed bump like kind of in passing at the very end during their montage. I almost thought Mike and Liz were going to get the montage treatment.
Yeah, and who knows what the timing was, obviously, as we talked about in the Amazing Race. You know, I think there was one moment at that stadium where we saw the 2 teams together, but otherwise we really didn't see that any of them interact for the rest of the leg. So we have no idea how far apart they are. But yeah, like I said before, I was like, when is this speed bump coming? And so, you know, it's all dependent. I mean, had Mike and Liz been able to navigate themselves further, maybe they don't get U-turned, maybe they're able to handle the speed bump well and be able to actually still land in a pretty good spot. But like you said, Jess, their race lived and died with self-driving. I mean, it's rather poetic because that's what almost got them eliminated in the first leg, and that's what got them eliminated in their last leg.
Right.
Yeah, it just killed them. And I just don't get it. I mean, we're only seeing a very small edited portion of this, but basically we see Liz saying over and over, turn around, turn around. And they don't even stop the car. It's like, pull, maybe there's nowhere they could have stopped on that road or something, but pull over and stop and talk. And he's like still driving full on go, 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 go. And I don't know. It's just one of those weird, it's one of those personality things, especially they don't know each other that well. So, you know, they're trying to kind of navigate it and no pun intended there, but it didn't work out.
Yeah, I love that. Like, we keep cutting back to them and then they're just driving down like dirt roads in the mountains. Like, listen, I know this city, Arahova, even though there apparently are 2 of them, they might, it might be a very secluded village, but it's not going to be up in the middle of the mountains off this dirt path.
Yeah, I mean, how do you get all your like production crew and stuff up there? Phil is not John Montgomery. You can't just like drop him out of a helicopter.
I did start to wonder if they were just going to hit a point, you know, where they're just driving and it gets dark and Phil, and they're just like, Phil doesn't even find them. They're just like standing at the top of the mountain, like, Mike and Liz have been eliminated, like words across the bottom of the screen or something.
Well, that happened in Amazing Race Australia too, right, Jess? Yep. I forget the name of the team, but they just gave up because they just got so lost on the highway that they couldn't get to their first task. So they just like pulled over to the side of the road and parked their car, and the host had to find them and eliminate them on the spot.
This was the sort of rockabilly team in Dubai.
Yeah, I think so.
And then there was also, I think that same season, there was also the brother and sister team in China who went to the wrong entrance of the Great Wall, which was in a totally different province. And eventually, like, Grant shows up. And of course, like, Grant is a condescending jerk to begin with. And he's just like, yeah, you guys know you're in Inner Mongolia now and you need to leave.
So they, I guess they lucked out that Team Fun basically circled that bridge forever and couldn't find it, because you never know what could have happened. Or they could have been like the team in season 3 after the Dieselgate, who just decided to check into a hotel and basically just be like, we're done, we're gonna go hang out at the hotel where everyone else was like there forever. So at least they didn't take that route. They fought it out, because they looked like they were ready to just end it. And then the crazy, I don't know, it's crazy how everything worked out. I feel like with better tasks, this episode could have been like a classic for the season.
Yeah, but if just one team is a little bit better at navigating, it becomes the least suspenseful leg of the race in history. And we don't have the tasks to fall back on at that point.
True. That's more likely, actually.
But we could fan fiction this out all day long. Is there anything else we need to talk about this episode before we go into some questions?
Oh, goodness. Oh, wow. I didn't even realize we're jumping into questions. I mean, I feel like we should break down the U-turn stuff before we jump into the questions, because we talked a little bit at the beginning. But, you know, as it is a big part of the episode, I think we really need to focus on this idea of, you know, the two big things are obviously Brooke and Scott going after Mike and Liz, even though it was promised in a previous roadblock that Brooke said specifically to Michael for helping her with the ladle, we will not U-turn you. They went back on their word. And on top of that, Tara and Joey have this apparent sort of alliance with Michael and Liz that they decided to U-turn Team Fun, which I know, I think it was Brian Altschul in the patron thread who, you know, went hard on Tara and Joey for, you know, saying like, why are you, should they be the most, oh no, it was John Ottaviano asked, are Tara and Joey do they lose points in their popularity for targeting the greatest team in Amazing Race history? And, I mean, yeah, we got vocalizations from both London and Becca of who U-turns Team Fun. So it definitely seemed to come out of nowhere.
Well, and the interesting thing is, I wish that the show had gone into this a little bit more. Mike, I know you are a secret scenes kind of guy. Last week in the secret scenes, we did have a little bit of Tara and Liz explaining that they are very close and that they kind of had this moment where they bonded and they wanted to continue to race together. But since we didn't see that on the actual show itself, this did come out of nowhere. And it did kind of feel like, you know, what is so great about this bond that you would actually U-turn Team Fun over it?
Yeah, it was weird. It's one of those things, too, where they said something about, well, we just want to give them a chance. And I didn't even think of it in terms of, well, they have this close bond. I just thought of it in terms of this cast is really close. They just want it to be fair. And Team Fun's not standing there, whereas, you know, all those teams came running to the mat at the same time, the three teams. So they thought, well, we know they're behind them. Let's just, you know, do something nice. But Tara and Joey were the same team that in the second U-turn were like, we don't want to U-turn anybody because we want to be nice, but I assume that's because they thought it would hurt him this time. But it would have been great to hear them say, maybe in a confessional, we think Team Fun is a threat, so we want to get them out. Because if that's the case, then I understand it, because they want to get rid of a team that they think is more threatening. But we have no idea. We can only, it just seemed kind of weird because we can only speculate.
Yeah, I mean, if they're going to spend the entire season like hyping up U-turns, putting them in weird places and making one every other leg, you know, they've got to at least spend some time on it in a way that makes it meaningful.
And we almost lost Team Fun because of this placement before the detour. Because let's sort of parse things out here. If the detour went through as it should have, I mean, granted, Tara and Joey were dancing at the wedding for a while before they realized that they didn't need to do that to get the clue. But if they still went through in first place, the reason why they U-turned Team Fun was because they saw Michael and Liz had gotten U-turned. So for all intents and purposes, they could have gone to the U-turn first, said, no, we don't want to do it. Then Brooke and Scott can still U-turn, you know, Michael and Liz. Maybe they tell the boys to U-turn them to cancel it out like they did with Ashton and Vank. But yeah, I mean, I think it was purely reactive because we had that sort of three team pile up at the U-turn placemat, I guess I'll call it, because it wasn't even the board at that point. But it goes to show that this placement had a huge effect, and maybe it was the intended effect. We're not entirely sure. And as a result, we had one of the more beloved teams, not only in this season, but in recent Amazing Race, possibly go out or have a greater chance of going out because Tara and Joey were able to look over and say, oh, they're going after my friends. Now I need to fire across the bow.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, because if you look at it, where if let's say Mike the U-turn is there and Tara and Joey don't do it. So let's say Michael and Liz get up there and they've been U-turn, they don't know who's really behind them. So there's no guarantee they would U-turn Team Fun there. You know, because you figure they come up and they want to pick a second team. They might have picked a team that was in front of them. They might have thought, well, Scott and Brooke have been bad, or London Logan or whatever. So it might have not doing it could have made the episode completely different and really screwed Michael and Liz.
That's interesting. It seemed like all of the teams knew exactly who was and was not behind them, which that seemed kind of hinky to me as well.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's sort of what happens when you have a bunch of teams stick together when they're navigating. I know Lolo is going to fall behind the main group because I guess they have problems, you know, shifting gears, and thank goodness we don't have any problems with as much self-driving as you may lavish praise onto this season, Dan. At least we have not had somebody have a problem with stick shift this season. No more Bergen and Kurtz, which might have been a reason why they stopped doing self-driving for a couple seasons. But you know, it seemed like since they kind of all stuck together pretty much the entire leg, Tara and Joy are going to break off. But starting off there, they're going to say like, okay, we're pretty knowledgeable of where they are. I mean, in those secret scenes, it seemed like when they got to the mat, everyone pretty much knew where they were going to be, which did not make for really like fantastic mat reactions, despite Lolo being so happy that they were fourth place and saying it was their highest placement yet, which is a little sad, unfortunately. But hey, if you can find positivity in anything, I'll give you that.
I'm not prepared to give them the positivity medal when we still have Team Fun in the race.
That's very true. They're the gold standard.
Yeah. And in fact, if they're not getting it, I think Scott's getting it.
Well, speaking of Scott, I mean, going back to this question, do you think Brooke and Scott needed to U-turn Michael and Liz? And if so, do you feel like it's all's fair in the Amazing Race with them specifically going back on their promise to and U-turning them?
I think
I'm okay with that.
I'm okay with it too. I just think you shouldn't ever make those promises because you don't know what's going to happen, and you could find yourself in a position where you have to do it. I don't think they had to in this case. I get why they did it, and I think it made sense, but it wasn't necessary. They didn't have to. Like, they would still be here tomorrow, and you know, Mike and Liz probably had a pretty good chance of going out with or without it.
Yeah, I agree. I think that it's the last U-turn, and the show, by putting so many U-turns, I think is really trying to encourage people. Who knows if there's producers and interviews really hyping the U-turn. So I think they really want teams to use it because there's nothing less thrilling than having teams talk about the U-turn for 15 minutes and then no one uses it for the show, possibly for us. But yeah, I wonder too if, I mean, she made that promise. That was probably, I don't know, I can't think of for sure. That was probably before the second U-turn when the Vank and Ashton U-turn was.
It was, yeah. The ladles came in leg four. So it was right after the Seth and Olive U-turn, but it was a couple legs before the Vank and Ashton U-turn.
Right. So maybe they thought it was covered because they didn't U-turn them the second time. But I, you know, because how much they do on the race, I'm not 100% sure that Scott and Brooke, I mean, unless it came up in the secret scenes, remembered even that they had made that promise.
I mean, I don't want to put myself in the mind of Brooke during that task, but I'm pretty sure she was reaching out to each and every person, offering everything on the table in order to get her ladle made. And, you know, it's interesting that we sort of got that scene in the fourth episode where she and Becca paid each other back for helping each other out right in that episode. So I guess if you want Brooke to do you a favor, it needs to be in that leg, or else her and Scott might forget about it.
They've probably made a lot of promises, and we just got to see the few that mattered.
Yeah, I mean, they have been one of the more strategically, socially savvy teams on the race so far. At least they've been the most like vocally strategic, at least in this bunch. So I could totally see them trying to wheel and deal a little bit, especially since they're not one of the stronger teams. So they're going to say, hey, what's going to get us ahead are our relationships with other people.
And I think it is interesting when a team brings that sort of survivor strategy into the show. It's almost a sort of Robin Amber dynamic where they're kind of breaking the structure of the race to get ahead.
Yeah, it's because that brings me right back to Meat Block, right? When Rob is able to convince three other teams to quit along with him so he doesn't have to face the 4-hour penalty alone. I think it is gaming the system. And I think I can agree with some people who say, like, you know, I don't watch Amazing Race for that. That's why I watch Survivor or Big Brother. Unfortunately, I think it's sort of a part of the game now. I think it's an eye popping thing that, as you said before, I think the Amazing Race producers want to put on the show in order to really instigate drama. So I don't know if I want three on a season moving forward and to have them be built up so big. I think they're going to have to stay blind so that you said it perfectly, Jess, when you were talking about like the history of the U-turn in your episode 3 recap about how the producers did this to sort of incentivize people that, hey, you know, no one can know that you were the one U-turning, but it just leads to more dispiriting moments. It's good strategy, but it makes for not so great television. The Vank and Ashton one is probably the clearest example of this.
Yeah, I don't think you want everybody to do that all the time, but I think every so often when you kind of bring it in around the edges, I think it's okay. I think it makes the show more interesting. I think the problem is when everybody thinks they're good at that and they try to do it and almost nobody is good at that. So it's actually kind of a relief that Scott in particular, and I think also Brooke to some extent, I think they're very, very good at it. And that's kind of a joy to watch. But, you know, while we're workshopping the U-turn a little bit, and, you know, since it's, you know, boss man's away and I'm allowed to bring up weird foreign editions of The Amazing Race, I'm going to throw another one at you guys. And I want to see what you think of this idea. In Amazing Race Australia season 2, they had a lot of yields, which we've all agreed the yield is crap and should never happen again. But the way they determined a couple of these yields is at the pit stop before the leg started, they asked every team, who do you want to yield? And then whoever got the most votes ended up getting yielded. What do you guys think of this?
I liked seeing it in Amazing Race Australia too, particularly because I won't spoil that season for anybody, even though I spoiled an elimination beforehand. But there is one team that going into that leg of the race is sort of the top dog, the definitive top dog. And as a result, they're able to get handicapped a bit to sort of give the other teams a fighting chance, which is always nice in order to sort of provide competition and good television. But at the same time, I would feel like I would want to see it, but maybe for only one season, because my fear is that they game it too quickly and we get, like, for example, if it existed in like Amazing Race season 10, you had the backpack alliance of those three teams. They could very easily rope some people together and control the vote. I feel like when it starts to become Survivor like of like, hey, let's gather together a coalition to vote for a certain team each leg, then it becomes not so fun.
Yeah. And I really like this idea, and as part of kind of a general approach to the race, because, and Mike, you make a great point in that if you do something too often, it can lead, or even a few times, it can lead to predictability and teams can game it. What I would like to see the show do, and I think that we saw with the Vank and Ashton thing and with everything, is the teams look ahead, they know what's coming, they know it's the U-turn, they can figure it out. Why not kind of do what Survivor's done with Immunity Idols and something where you're changing it up a lot? Like, Jess, your example is a great example of something they could try. You put the U-turn in a different place. You have, you know, different ways to use it. I don't know. There are things I don't have any off the top of my head that would work out perfectly. But if they could keep shifting it, like they do the vote once, next time it's another approach, or you do three teams if there's a lot left, or you just try some different things. I think that's the thing we saw even with the Express Pass discussions or with the U-turn, where if it's the same, they're having the same discussions, the same things are happening, it doesn't lead to as much excitement. I would just love to see them try some different things. And the U.S. Amazing Race, unlike most of the international versions, just they are willing to really mess too much with the formula.
And that is surprising, right? Because this is the original version. It's gone for the longest. And we see its equivalent in Survivor has been trying a lot of things, especially in the recent years, where, as you said, Dan, you're completely correct. Amazing Race has really been much more conservative with the twist, with, you know, going back to Australia. Even outside of that vote for the yield, we had something like the salvage pass, where it's like, hey, you came in first, now you can determine if this team stays in the race or not. Which, I mean, who knows, if we had it this time, Tara and Joey could have saved Mike and Liz. They could have said, hey, it's another non-elimination leg. We want to keep our friends around. So I'm all for experimenting more if it provides for good television, as long as it doesn't really break the integrity of the race. But again, so I would say, going back to your initial question, Jess, I think it's a fun idea, and it can lead for more strategizing. I also would question how often it would be as well. If it's every leg, that might get a little repetitive. But if you throw it in, or as Dan said, if you sort of throw off the frequency of it, maybe do like a voted upon U-turn and then like a U-turn proper 4 legs later, that could definitely diversify it a bit.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I want to see it happen once, pretty much. I don't need it to be like one of these, and I'm just going to be a total nerd this week. I don't want it to be one of those Amazing Race Israel things where every single episode has every single twist in it. And like, oh, now we're coming up to the face off, and oh, now it's time for the yield, and now here's the U-turn right after the yield. And, you know, you don't want to get people used to a twist being part of the game, but you want to keep it fresh, and you want to keep them excited. And I think this is something we haven't seen stateside. And given that we got a whole season of teams that don't know each other, that's a pretty big way to F with the formula, right? So I think they're open to it. And I think, provided we get some future seasons, I think we could see some experimentation on this level.
I would hope so, because that's what the race tends to find something new. Like, they're like, okay, now we've got the intersection, and then teams break the intersection, like in the All-Stars. Then we're done with that. Okay, we'll try the save once. Well, that didn't really work. Okay, how about we try this? They seem to get very linear in the thinking, and I don't want to get too much in the, I'm getting on my soapbox a little bit here. I'm pounding on the table, which I tend to do when the three of us talk, but I just like the idea of, especially with the show not being as popular, if they say, we think the show's cheap enough, and some of these changes aren't expensive. That's the thing. You can find ways to make the show interesting if you really want to throw in strategy. But like Mike said, there is that fine line where all of a sudden the show is not even really the Amazing Race, and it's some sort of weird Amazing Race Survivor Big Brother hybrid that could be, that everyone just throws up their hands and quits.
And I mean, if you ask some of the purest fans, we've already trampled on that line many, many times over by this point.
Oh, wait, as soon as they got rid of fast forwards every leg, the Amazing Race was done from those people's perspective.
That's true. It's very, very true. Well, all right, guys, let's do a couple of questions just to wrap things up, just because I feel bad that we ask people for questions and then we're not going to get to them.
Like, I mean, I feel like we didn't also talk about like any of the tasks and the legs. This would be a good way to talk about them.
Yeah, I think we covered everything. Like, we did mention every single task at least once. I think we're covered.
That's true. And do you guys have any standouts? I mean, I think you referenced it in the beginning, Jess, but I mean, I think the thing to get out of that donkey task, besides the use of the term Seabiscuit from the boys, is this the first animal ever to get a lower third?
Oh, yes.
I think it might be.
Professional, too. Not just a donkey. Professional.
That's my favorite novelty lower third since Hag and the Handsome Pilot.
are they going to bring up Millie and Chuck going from dating virgins to just dating in the middle of season four during that, that random pit stop?
I think it was actually dating 12 years / virgins at the beginning.
But. Oh, yes. And then just went to dating 12 years. Speedy McSpeederson, though, was up there. And I know that, like, it totally goes in with the memification of the Bodie McBoat face / name whatever you want to. So, you know, Floyd's young. I could totally imagine him using that naming device to you know, give his donkey a moniker.
Well, what if the donkey already had a name? Like, that, you know, we've had animals that have definitely had names in the past. You know, are you stealing its identity?
Yeah, but I mean, you couldn't just have like # George. You'd have to have something more unique, or hashtag Ed, or, you know, or something.
So I don't know. They use # step in time for the roadblock, blatantly ripping off Mary Poppins.
Yeah, and thanks for getting that stuck in my head all week, Amazing Race.
So I know one of the questions you had given us some homework there, Jess, which, yes, I am prepared for. So I don't know if we want to dive into that question.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it.
That one's from Clayton Odell, asked the question, which Rob has been all over. Our team Lolo, top 5 most boring teams to get this far. Now, first, I just want to say my answer is no, but I'll let you, you know, I think they're fun. I think they are seeming more boring because of the edit and because we have, well, team fun. But Jess, I don't know, I'll let you lead into what you took from this.
Well, I gave you guys the homework of making the top 5 most boring Amazing Race teams to make the top 5. I'm not sure how far you guys got with this, but if everybody just wants to throw out their favorite most boring team contender, I'm all here. I'm here for it.
Yeah, I went through top 5, so they had to make it at least like halfway through the race. I have a few, but I can throw out my top one, who made it very, very far and almost won the Amazing Race 19. My pick for most boring team, late game team in Amazing Race history would be Jeremy and Sandy. So I think the only thing they did the entire race was like they got lost and they went to like a department store instead of one of the locations in the final leg. And that's why they lost.
And I think they were supposed to be the bickering team, but they kind of never bickered.
Yeah, they did absolutely nothing.
All right. Well, I did come up with 5, and it did include Chuck and Millie, but that's not going to be my choice. I looked at some of these winners that basically really boring winners, and I had a few that almost made it. Megan and Shane and Dana and Matt from last season. But my most boring winners to me are forgettable. Are Tyler and James from season 10.
Oh, the model addicts.
Yeah, who just didn't have much going for them. They didn't finish near the top. And you got to the end and all of a sudden it's like, oh, they won. How did that happen? I thought we were going for something different. That was a weird season and I kind of like it. But that team, they just left no impression at all.
The Bushkowskis brothers are angry at you right now, Dan Heaton. They're going to tweet you furiously because I believe they were the ones that, I think either they introduced Tyler and James to Amazing Race or Amazing Race introduced them to Survivor. I'm not sure what the timeline is. It's probably the former, but yeah, they know each other.
I'm waiting for it. Bring it on.
It's another one of those like Boo Burness social hubs that's going on around James and Tyler. So you don't want to mess with that. But I would say my pick for most boring team to make it really deep into the race, I'm going to go with season 17's Jill and Thomas. See, they're so boring. You guys. Yeah. That's kind of your reaction to them. The only thing I remember about them is that he was very proud of his alma mater. And that was pretty much the only thing they did the entire time.
Yeah, the only thing I remembered about them was that I think they were the very first team to ever use an express pass because that got introduced in season 17. So that's, yeah, the only other really big name that I threw out. I mean, we talked about people like the Iska Babes beforehand or even someone like Allie and Steve from the Blind Date season. But the only other name I had threw out there was Ray and Yolanda from the aforementioned season 9. Yeah. Like they like made it to the final 3, but it was the season 9 was so much about the frat boys versus the hippies that Ray and Yolanda were just sort of like the side dish to that meal.
I feel like 9 and 10, I think they kind of fall into this pit of like they just weren't good enough to make you forget the family edition. And so they kind of get tarred with that brush. And I'm sure they're good seasons in their own right. But I always forget about pretty much everything that happened in those two seasons.
Well, 10 was so much about the backpack and David and Mary. And I mean, it had Dustin and Candace, who seemed like they were going to be the winners. And 9, I was so pumped for because it seemed like, you know, back to the real thing. But it really got dominated by those two teams. And it's hard to go back and watch BJ and Tyler again after all that. The only other team I had was Beth and Mona.
Roller
moms. This is going to be fun. And they were very good racers. They seemed nice, but they didn't, for a team that made the top three, which I did not remember till I looked it up. That's not one of the most thrilling teams we've had.
Yeah. I was kind of surprised too. I remembered them. I remembered that final leg, but I remembered about that final leg, like, that whole top three was a little bit boring because you also had Max and Katie, who were supposed to be another one of those screaming teams, and they never really delivered on that promise either. But We could write a whole thesis on teams that are supposed to be the arguing team that never really get off the ground.
So there we go, Clayton. We just named 5 teams between the three of us that are more boring than Lolo. So you know what? I still hold out hope for them. We'll see if Rob comes back to contest that next week during your big. Maybe we have 2 hours next week. Maybe Lolo comes into the limelight now that there are only 5 teams left. But I think they're fine. Are they the biggest flatliners out of the rest of this cast? Sure. But that just still does not make them a completely boring team in the canon of The Amazing Race.
Yeah, I mean, they can't all be team fun, because if they all were, I think our heads would explode. All right, so we got a couple more fun questions here. Derek Boucher wants to know, did Matt successfully look cute in his outfit, or did he disappoint Redmond?
Matt and Redmond are what do you guys think of, like, Matt and Redmond sort of going a little tangential here to, like, their comedic sort of asides? Like, I know we got a question about from like Christian Zicardo about them being the next Abbott and Costello, but we have those comments. We have, you know, the whole like, hey, I met a guy with a carbon fiber leg named Redmond. Oh, what'd you name his other leg? Like did you expect these little comedic moments out of the two of them? I guess I'll pose the question in that regard.
I mean, I think that was my impression of Redmond going into this thing. And then he kind of turned out to be sort of sinister for a while. And now he's back to that sort of happy-go-lucky guy that I predicted he'd be.
Yeah, I like this Matt Redmond much more than the guy who was just telling Vank like how terrible he was over and over. So it's fun. And they still are very competitive. Like Redmond's face when they found out they finished second, he looked like something terrible had happened in his life. Like he had this, they tried to play it off. He's like, oh, okay. But his eyes, you just see this like death in his eyes. Like he, but with that said, I think that the fact that the jokes are so bad makes him a lot more endearing. So yeah. I think it's like
what was the blind man and his wife on Amazing Race Canada this past season?
Oh, Julian Lowell.
Yeah, yes. It's like them and that, like they're making bad jokes and they know they are. So, yes, as Christian may allude to, even though it might produce eye rolls on behalf of the audience, and Redmond has not, as you said before, made a great name for himself between the Vank stuff, but also, you know, his like, oh, we're boys, we don't have drama type of thing, which I know got on probably all of our nerves. I think it's moments like this that sort of lighten them up a little bit. And I guess to answer the initial question, I mean, I think Matt looked very cute in that outfit. How could you not? You have pom poms on your feet.
It's true. I love the little slippers.
I also like there was a question. Well, I don't know if I like it, but we had a few people ask us if the quality of the challenges has gone down. We had Lisa Imhoff, who's on Twitter, asked if this is supposed to be a senior citizen season, so the challenges are lame. Aubrey Bredko, have the quality of the challenges gone down? What do you guys think? Do you think that they've gone down this season, or is it more kind of a long-term trend? Or,
well, they're not season 24 bad, so I'm okay.
Yeah, well, I don't know. We have yet to get to the final leg where it's like, what, screwing a bunch of light bulbs. We'll see exactly what the final leg is for season 29. But I mean, I would kind of attribute it more to like a downward sloping trend. I mean, even though it's only the second time we've been to Greece, Amazing Race is in its 29th iteration. They're trying to come up with as many new and relevant tasks as possible. I mean, off the top of your head, guys, can you think of like the most exciting tasks this season?
Oh man.
I can think of Shamir breaking the window.
Yeah, but that's the thing is, like, you think of like Shamir breaking the window, or you think of like Brooke, you know, freaking out over the ladle, or I would say the most entertaining task of this entire season so far has been in Norway with the weird as hell trolls with the fireworks.
Oh yeah, that was good.
But outside of that, it's all dependent on how the way people react to the tasks. So I think it goes to show that like the tasks themselves are not great. It depends on how you react to the tasks, except for, as I just mentioned, I still cannot get over the acid trip that was the trolls with the poem and the giant fireworks.
And nobody reacted to that half as well as they should have.
Yeah, Rob and I had bigger reactions to it, I think, than the teams did. They were probably so like freaked out at this point or so exhausted. They were just like, great, give me my giant firework. Let me just move on.
Yeah, I mean, I like the singing task that they had. That was kind of fun, but they've had better ones in the past, I think.
Exactly.
And I thought about them eating on that train, but that wasn't particularly thrilling. But I was like, that's something kind of different on the trolley. I mean, something different that we haven't seen. But overall, I don't think this season is on its own. I just, in general, this is the way they're heading. I think that this is kind of like Mike said, it's similar, but, you know, a little disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to kind of pretty places and they're doing mildly interesting things, and if you have a good cast, you can overcome that, right?
Yeah, and that's exactly, again, what I'm feeling right now is, you know, as much manure as we might be piling, or donkey poop, which people seem to step in a lot this episode, as we're piling onto the leg design of this episode in particular, I cannot say enough how much I've been enjoying this season because of the people that are on it. I cannot say enough about how much I think CBS really struck gold in casting singles over teams, and that they found really interesting individual personalities. So when they paired them together, it was going to make for a lot of fun. And again, a reason why we remember a good amount of things that happened this season is because of the people, not necessarily what they were doing and where they were doing them.
Yeah, I'm definitely on board with that. All right, gentlemen, do you have a hashtag for this episode that's better than TARASPS?
Sounds like some weird, like, government organization.
Yeah, well, and it's the high school that I went to was always abbreviated SPS. And so every time I see those three letters together, I think I'm talking about my high school.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the All-Star Perfect Strangers is the way to go, but I don't know if that's too long.
Yeah, hence why we abbreviated it. I think it could be fun. It's going to make for, if and when it happens, it's going to make for an extremely long moniker that will piss off the purists to begin with. So why the heck not? Let's formally throw our hat into the think tank ring and suggest that as the hashtag.
Yep. And while you're at it, if you're tweeting us that hashtag, tell us who is your dream team for the TARASPS.
Oh, that's great.
Mine would probably be, ooh, let's go old and new. Let's go Colin and Brooke. I think that would be a really fun team.
I like it. I want to see, Flo and Jonathan was the one I threw out kind of randomly, but I want to see Marie and Haley.
Oh, that would be fun, man. This is a tricky one. How about Rob, Mariano, and Rachel Riley?
Guys, this could be an entirely off-season podcast. Is take individual racers and pair them together.
This is gold. Let's save it for the off-season. But yes, in the meantime, if you think you've got something better than what we just came up with, please tweet it to us. We want to know, and we'd love to hear your thoughts in general. There are many, many ways you can do that. You can always tweet at us. I am at Haymaker Hattie.
I am at a Mike Bloom type.
I am at the Dan Heaton.
We always love to hear your thoughts on this or pretty much anything else. We have a lot of great shows coming up for you next week. Rob and I will be back on Friday night recording our reactions to the 2-hour marathon that will be happening next Thursday night. Make sure you check your DVRs so that you're getting both halves of it, because I'm sure they're going to present it as a 2-hour block. That is two separate episodes. So
Jess, do you have any predictions at the moment? Because I know that things were a little wonky with the previous double episode in that it was elimination, then keep on racing. Do you think we're going to see what, elimination, non-elimination, non-elimination, elimination?
My gut says we're going to get non-elimination, elimination, but you know, it could be anything. We'll see. We need to have at least one more non-elimination to make all the numbers match up. So it could be we're getting to see two teams get eliminated next week. It could be anything. But at any rate, check your DVRs. Make sure you're getting both halves of that, because I know there were a lot of angry people the last time there was a double leg. And so, yes, feel free to tweet at us. Please feel free to leave comments at robiswebsite.com. And you can always find us under the dedicated Amazing Race feed or under Reality Rehap Ups. And either one of those places, please feel free to subscribe on iTunes. Leave us some reviews and comments. We always like to hear those as well, and they help boost our profile over on iTunes. So with all of that, I want to thank Mike and Dan for pinch hitting for Rob. These are big shoes to fill, and I always love talking to you guys because you guys let me get a little geekier than Rob ever does.
Thank you so much for having us on.
No, thanks, Jess. It was a blast, and I'm enjoying this cast a lot, so it's going to be fun.
Excited to see how it's going to play out. If Team Lolo conquers everything, that will truly be the like weird Game of Thrones-esque ending of somebody random coming in and taking the throne. But it seems like, you know, outside of them, with these other four teams, if any one of them wins, I would be fine with it personally.
I'm sure you would, Mike, because
literally I'm going to win with any of them.
Mike has locked it down already. It's just a matter of who's going to be his co-champion. All right, so thanks everybody for tuning in. Thanks again to Mike and Dan for joining us, and we'll see you next week.